So I'm delighted to be here. Josh asked if I would come. I thought he would be gone, and he asked if I would fill in his summer series. And he gave me this passage to work from, and I thought, Josh, this is the easiest passage in the entire book of Philippians. I know he's probably told you that there are some who think that the book of Philippians is a book about happiness and a book about joy, and if that is true, then this subject of contentment, which lies inside of these verses, really is highly correlated to this idea of our happiness and our joy in life. Before I get to those scriptures, I want to have you to think with me on maybe a kind of a strange way of thinking. If I ask if any of you had a dog, I think some of you would raise your hand, wouldn't you? If I ask if your dog lived inside of your house, some of you might raise your hand. You think, what in the world am I talking about? Well, several years, let me ask you the question. What is the primary difference between humans and all other of the living creatures that God created? What would your answer be? That question was asked of me many, many years ago, and very quickly I came forth with an answer, and I haven't changed that answer throughout all these years. I quickly said, as humans, God gave us the ability to see the future different from what exists today. And he gave us the ability to take steps, to make choices, to make that future that we see to come true. Now, your dog, if your dog lives in the house, do you think your dog ever looks outside of your window and peers across the street at the neighbor across the street? And do you think your dog ever thinks like this? I just wonder what life would be like if I lived over there. I wonder if life would be better if I just lived over there. And I wonder if I would do this today and this, these other two things tomorrow. Maybe they just move me over there. And you kind of quietly chuckle because you know that's ridiculous thinking. Your dog does not have the ability to think like that. Nor does my horse, nor does my cow. But I think like that all the time. I all the time think about how the future can be different from what exists today. And I know I can take steps to make that future come true. But I have focused so much on the future. I have focused so much on what can take place tomorrow that I have missed this present moment. And Suze could tell you that I've done that a lot. Because you and I both know that what we focus on grows. You understand that? What you focus on and hold in your mind gets larger and larger. What you focus on grows. And sometimes I focus so much on the future, being different from what it is today, and taking steps to make it come true, that I miss this present moment. Maybe you've done the same. It's common. But the exact opposite also happens. I begin to look at the past. And I begin to become a little bit nostalgic. And I think how wonderful the past has been. And I start focusing on what used to be and what used to be. And it gets larger and larger in my mind. And sometimes I so long for the past that I miss this present moment. Does that describe anybody in this audience? And then I try to live in this present moment, only to find that this particular day in which I'm trying to live in this present moment has all these problems and all these troubles and all these difficulties. And I fret and I worry throughout those difficulties. And so I look at these three things: the future, the past, and a difficult present And what I discover is that this subject is very elusive, this contentment that I'm supposed to live with is indeed an elusive quality. Have you found that? Have you found that to be true in your life? That you really want to be so content and so, and yet you, the past, the future, the present moment so difficult. And now Paul speaks to it. That's the interesting thing. Paul's going to speak directly to what we're talking about. So we're going to read together Philippians chapter 4, beginning in verse 10, the easiest passage, Josh, in the entire book of Philippians, and he gave it away. I don't know why. He should have stuck me in chapter 1 or chapter 2. But let's read what Paul says, and especially pay attention to verse 10. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. I don't know what's going on in Paul's life. I have no idea. I just know that something is happening in his present moment that's not really good. And other people have found out about it. And these people in Philippi have been concerned about Paul's hardship. And I'm really thankful that you people have renewed your concern for me. You were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it, and I understand that. Now watch this. I'm not saying this because I am in need. For I have learned, and I wish if it were possible, you would just underline that in your mind. I have learned to be content. One translation will say, I've learned the secret of being content. I have learned. It doesn't come naturally, does it? I spend too much time in the future. I spend too much time in the past. I have too many problems today. I have learned in all of that to be content. Whatever the circumstances. Here's what I know about life. I know what it is to be in need. I also know what it is to have everything I need, plenty. And I've learned the secret of being content in either one of those situations, in any and every situation, whether it's well-fed or whether it's hungry or whether it's living with plenty or whether we're living in want. I've just learned how to be content. Wouldn't you like to do that this morning? Don't you think it'd make life so much better if we could learn how to be content for this entire day, all day long? There's a lady who lives here in Texas, lives down in Houston, works at the University of Houston, very popular author. She does research in the field of social work. You'll recognize her name, Brené Brown. She wrote a book. She's written many books, but one book caught my attention many years ago. It was a book called Daring Greatly. So I picked up the book. I've read the book two or three times, but I picked up the book the first time, and I read over it about page 50, somewhere in there, and she said the number one problem we have here in America, the number one problem with our culture is the principle of scarcity. I stopped right there and thought, this cannot be true. What in the world is this well-known author thinking? The principle of scarcity? There is nothing scarce in the land in which we live. We have plenty. I would have said the number one problem was something like narcissism. I would have said the number one problem was everybody's kind of saying, what about me? She said, no, that's not it. It's the principle of scarcity. And she said, here's the definition of the principle of scarcity, which then opened my eyes greatly. She said, this principle of scarcity is the principle whereby we live thinking it's never enough. It's never enough. She said, we're plagued in this world of ours with this thinking that it's never enough. And we keep thinking, if we can just get a little bit more, and then life's going to get so good. And so now we open our closet doors, and we look in our clothes, and we say, it's not enough. And we look at our house, and we look at someone's house down the street, and we say, ours is not enough. And the car in the driveway is just not enough. And she said, it's gotten to the point where some spouses will look at their spouse and they'll say, well, he's just not enough, or she's just not enough. And it's getting so bad that sometimes parents look at their children and say, just not enough. And she said, we are on this treadmill where we're running faster and faster, and they just keep turning up the dial, and it keeps going faster, and we never get there. And we're miserable. Does that make sense to anybody in this audience? And then she said something so amazing. She said, the antidote to the it's not enough thinking is to be able to say, it is enough. It is enough. Where God has me at this moment, it is enough. It may not be where I am the rest of my life, but it is enough. And I was stunned by it. In fact, not long after I discovered that, we had all our family together. Susan and I have two children. We have a daughter and her husband, and they have two daughters, and they still live out in Lubbock. And we have a son and his wife, and they have two sons, and they live on a ranch in western Oklahoma that we kind of work with them on. And they were all together. And I said, I've got to tell you this principle. I've got to tell you what I've learned. That when we're all running, and we're running faster and faster, thinking if we have just a little bit more, life is going to get so much better. And we're living like it's never enough. And I said, what we got to learn to say is, it is enough. Where God has me at this moment, it is enough. And I remember our daughter looking at me and saying, Daddy, are you trying to say we can never get a new car? I said, oh no, that's not what I mean at all. If you need one, you get one. And God gave you this wonderful, wonderful ability to see the future and to see it differently from what exists today. And you can take steps to make that come true, but don't let that drive your life. Don't let that run your life. Don't miss this present moment. Paul somehow had learned that he could look at any situation and say, it's enough. Where God has me, it's okay. Now, I would tell you that this next thing is really important. It's called willpower. It can be learned, and it can be learned through willpower. I believe in willpower. I believe in discipline. I believe that people who have the most discipline usually win. I really believe that kind of stuff, but I got to tell you, willpower will only take you so far, and it will never take you far enough. Your own strength, your own willpower will never get you in this life where you want to go. And I can't willpower myself into being content in every single situation. Does everybody get that? Josh told me to keep it really short, okay? He said, these people don't like to listen to long-winded people. I always keep it short. I got one more thing I got to tell you. If I ended this lesson right here, it wouldn't work. You might enjoy the moment, but it just wouldn't be applicable. It would not work. It's not possible. So here comes verse 13. Here comes verse 13. Verse 13 is the bumper sticker scripture of the New Testament. Verse 13 is the t-shirt sticker of the book of Philippians. I can do all, you remember it? I can do all things through Him who gives me strength. You see it everywhere. But here it lies in the context of Paul saying, I've learned the secret of how to be content. And he said, I can do it. Not just by my willpower, not just by my fabulous strength, which not many of us have fabulous strength. Mine's getting less all the time, by the way. I talked to Gerald Turner at the back, and Gerald said, how old are you? You're back in the saddle? How old are you? Not as old as you. I didn't say it, Gerald. But I'm close. I'm really close. And we talked about how long to stay, and he said, your body will tell you. It's not by my willpower. I can do it through Him, through Jesus. So I got one last slide. The power of Jesus in our lives. In little letters underneath, it says Spirit-led. I want you to think about that one for a moment. I believed for years and years and years that God's Spirit lives inside of me. And I have believed that God's Spirit is real. And I have believed Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 20 that God is able to do immeasurably more in my life than I could ever imagine through His power that lives within me. I believed that for a long time. I just haven't practiced it. But about 3.5 years ago, I spent all this time not understanding, not applying it correctly. About 3.5 years ago, a person with whom I'd been doing executive coaching in a former life in New Mexico reached out and said, I've discovered these three podcasts. You might want to listen to them. I had no idea who the guy was. He actually lives here in Dallas who did the podcast. But I listened to them. I listened to them twice. He kept saying this one thing. He kept saying, before you do anything, ask God, what should I know? And then ask, what should I do? And then ask, what should I say? And why don't you make that a lifelong habit of starting. See, I've not done it that way. I'm the guy who has dreamed these big dreams, and I've designed these big steps to make these dreams come true, and I've gotten involved in it. I've looked over my shoulder, as it were, and said, now, God, would you bless it? No, not anymore. Not anymore. It starts with, God, what do you want? And waiting to listen. And it continues with the question, what do I need to know? What do I need to say? And so before I ever get up this morning, before all of you really important children of God, before I ever get up here, I talk to God like that. And I spoke to a little tiny audience last night, and I was not really comfortable doing that in that kind of setting, but I asked many times before I got there into that, what do I need to know? And what do I need to do? And what do I need to say? And what happens if in every situation of my life, even when it gets a bit unpleasant, I stop and say, God, you have me here for this moment. What do you want me to learn? What do you want me to know? What do you want me to do? Will you help me? Will you show me? And this mighty God who can do anything, this mighty God who is so glorious, and His Son Jesus, who gave His life for us, as you heard so eloquently over here a moment ago. And God's Spirit that lives inside of you, they work together for your good in every single situation. Now, do you see it? You and I. Oh, you can use a little of your willpower. But you and I can turn to God in every situation, every single day, and learn how to live in this present moment and learn how to live in a place of contentment. Will that work for all of you this morning? We are supposed to be a joyful, happy, wonderful people. God is on our side. God never leaves me. I have God's Spirit inside of me. Let's live like it. Let's just, you and I, make a deal together, okay? Let's just live like it. Let's stand and sing.